Funding for Think comes from SMU's Informal Courses for Adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What would you do to yourself to feel beautiful? Would you go days without eating? Pay a non-board certified MD to perform plastic surgery? Would you change your hair, your clothes, your cosmetic regimen? And would any of it make any difference the next time you tried to measure up to a supermodel? A new documentary called America the Beautiful explores the nation's obsession with physical beauty, especially in the way that it affects the self-esteem of women and girls, fed a steady stream of media images that glorify perfection as defined by fashion designers and Hollywood casting agents, and they express either pity or scorn for women who look more like real people. Dale Roberts wrote, directed, and produced America the Beautiful, which opens tomorrow at the Angelica Film Center in Dallas. Dale, welcome to Think.
Hey, how are you, Chris?
Good. What is required to be beautiful by U.S. standards?
Well, if you're referring to the industry, it's a size. In doing a documentary, I talked to a beauty scientist, and what she told me was this was like the easiest thing she's ever done because America has an obesity problem. And because most people are size 10, 12, 14, whatever, she goes, you make the standard of beauty size 0, only 2% of the population will be that size. The other 98 will buy products and billions of dollars of products to try to get that size, but they never will, and they'll just spend the rest of their life.
So if you decided the standard of beauty was a size, say, 6 or 8, too many people would fall into the category and they wouldn't need to buy anything.
Exactly. And it was interesting when she said that, because she said in any culture, if you make the standard of beauty the opposite of what the average person is, that's how you make the most money. So if the standard of beauty was, like, say, a size 12, people size 12 would look at the model size 12. They wouldn't feel like they needed to do anything. Oh, that's my body kind of thing.
And what benefits do we sort of believe are going to come to those who fall within that 2%?
No, who say we as in?
I guess as a society, not you and I necessarily,
right.
but the people who say, I want to look like these models, what do they assume will change about their lives?
I had people tell me that they believe, I guess the biggest thing is they think they'll be happier because they think they'll be able to upgrade and get a better mate, is what they were saying. They'd be able to marry better. And the ones other than that actually believe that they can get further ahead in the workplace. You see these studies on like MSN.com, and they'll say, pretty people earn more money. And that's just something we've been led to believe, that if you're beautiful, you know, your life will be better somehow.
Yeah, those studies are distressing on a variety of levels, one of which is the fact that people hear this, and if they're not falling into that category, they either write it off completely and assume they don't deserve that because they sort of don't look that way, or they go to great lengths to try and make it happen.
Absolutely. I had to tell you, this started my research here, this whole beauty madness, because we're predisposed to appreciate beauty. There's a part of our brain, the nucleus accumbens, it makes us hardwired. So when we see something beautiful, pathways light up, we enter a state of euphoria. Okay, that's been happening for hundreds, thousands of years. But the new part of it is that happened started with the women's lib movement. When women were housewives, advertisers were selling brooms and dustpans and mops, stuff like that. But after the women's lib movement and women went into the workforce, they would tell their husbands, oh, you cook tonight. I worked 8 hours just like you. Advertisers panicked because they were like, women are our biggest consumers. What are we going to sell them now? And they came up with this image. And Naomi Wolf, with her book, calls it the beauty myth. And it's by telling women, if you look like this, you will get ahead in the workforce. You will do this. You will do this. And what it really meant is your life will just be super and great. And that's where it came from. So advertisers, and you know, Twiggy, that skinny model, came out. All that kind of blended into where we are today, where, you know, just a parent gets 2,000 impressions a week with their child. Advertisers get 20,000. It's not even a fair fight anymore. An average teenage child really is raised by a sidekick or a video game.
So, in other words, everything that they decide about the way they should be comes from media, or a great deal of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Daryl Roberts is my guest. His new film is called America the Beautiful. It opens tomorrow at the Angelica Film Center in Dallas, and he will be at the Angelica for questions and answers tomorrow after the 7:20 and 9:45 p.m. shows.
Right.
I'm guessing no one's watching the movie at 7:20 in the morning. But
yeah.
Were you surprised at how self-righteous the magazine people that you talked to were regarding their influence on girls' self-esteem and women's self-esteem?
Yeah. What made me go there was this. I interviewed 200 women, ages like 14 to 62, and I asked them one of the questions, do you feel attractive? Do you feel beautiful? And only two said yes. So that's when it hit me. I'm like, wow, is it possible 99% of women could be walking the streets not feeling good about themselves? And the single thing that they attributed to making them feel bad was this image of a skinny model in a magazine. And I told them, oh, I can fix that for you. Put the magazine down. Just don't even read it anymore. But they're like, well, nah, you have to take a peek. And I'm like, huh, okay. Women have this love-hate relationship with these images. So I fly to New York to interview the editor-in-chiefs of 17, Cosmo Girl, Vogue, Lucky, like 15 different magazines. The editor from Us Weekly told me, I'm glad that it's like this or so I wouldn't have a job. I'm happy that we're corrupting more and more people to be interested in this stuff. 17 Magazine told me, 17 Magazine is not a not-for-profit. We're not social workers. We're here to make a buck. So they were very unapologetic as to the images that they're putting out there. And I told them how it made women feel, and it was just like too bad. I was surprised they were that honest and upfront about it. Absolutely.
And what do you think is responsible for the difference between the way women perceive themselves and their bodies and they compare themselves and men do? And we don't want to pretend that men don't care about their appearance, but it is a different sort of ethos.
Before it was totally different. It used to be that beauty was a woman's currency, power was a man's currency. A man could be 700 pounds, but if he had a nice job and a Ferrari, boom. Now, it's not equal, so women still do it more. But it started with the gay males, and they run these men's magazines, Men's Health, and all these magazines. They put these images all throughout the magazine, and it's called the Adonis Complex.
Guys that are cut.
The cut, six-pack. Like, when I go in a store now, I just skip the aisle and just go around it. You just don't want to see it. It's depressing, you know. And now you got a lot of gay men, because a lot of them have told me that they, like women, have body issues problem. They're having getting a lot of plastic surgery, and they feel a need to look like this image on a magazine. So more and more it's becoming, the lines are becoming more and more blurred between men and women. Even though it's not equal, but it's heading that way.
The funny thing about those magazines is that they all promise to contain the secret for making your own body look that way. And yet, you know, most of them are sold every single month. So it's almost like admitting that it's not working.
Yeah. It absolutely doesn't work. It creates fear and insecurities in us so that. But what is the real damage that it's doing? And I look at young girls in the film. The first girl that we interviewed, she was 12. She just decided she was ugly. And I'm like, well, why are you ugly? I don't know. I'm just ugly. I'm proud to be ugly. And she had just accepted, and she wasn't.
No, not at all.
That was the thing. She wasn't. She had just accepted. The little 8-year-old girl who told me she was ugly is creating low self-esteem in young girls, which we have to look at this from a societal perspective. You know, when a young girl feels ugly and has low self-esteem, they're not assertive, not confident. These are the ones that are in classrooms, sit in the back, don't raise their hands, and they're not realizing their full potential as human beings because some companies want to evoke, you know, insecurities in them and make them feel ugly. And it's really too bad, actually.
You have a really poignant scene in the film with a set of parents whose daughter died of bulimia. And the mother says, you know, I told her she was beautiful, but I would stand in front of the mirror and she would hear me criticizing my own body. Can you talk about the messages that young women get from their mothers about their body?
Actually, when she said that, I had never thought about it before, to be honest with you. But it's funny, after I interviewed her, different places I would go, I would see mothers doing it a lot around their daughters. And there's this thing where a young girl looks up to their mother, and they see their mother as having the same body that they do. So they continuously hear their mother go, I'm fat, I don't like my thighs, I need to go on a diet, blah, blah, blah. The young girl's like, I have that same body, so maybe I need to do it too. And in that case, the daughter did do it, got bulimia and died when she was 16. But we need to stop doing that. And to be honest with you, I saw this one family that did this, and it was awesome. They would have their two teenage daughters come over, and all their friends would come over, and they'd have a pizza party. And at the pizza party, there was tape a piece of paper to all the kids' back, and all the kids had to go around, and you could not comment on their physical face and find something beautiful about that person and write it on a piece of paper. So at the end of the party, everybody would pull the paper off their back and read all these things that are beautiful about them that had nothing to do with their looks. And it was empowering. You know, that's what we, you know, as parents need to start doing, is reinforcing other things around our kids that have nothing to do with our bodies and our looks.
I want to talk about the central character in your film, this 12-year-old model named Garen Taylor. She's 12 in the beginning of the film. And she's sort of picked out randomly when she's with her mother. Her mother was at a casting thing. And someone says to her, you really should be a model.
Yeah, I met Garen at a fashion show when she was 12. I thought she was 30. But anyway, when she was 12, she was walking the runway. I didn't think much of it. Looked like another model. The guy standing next to me said, oh, wow, I want to take this girl home with me tonight. And a lady heard him and said, well, if you do, you better be careful. She's only 12. So I look back. I'm like, that girl's 12? My body was all hanging out. And I was like, wow, the fashion industry has resorted to sexualizing a child. I met her mom at the fashion show and told her what I was doing with the documentary. And she allowed me to film them for the next 3-4 years. The interesting thing about Garen's story is when she was 10, people used to call her giraffe and stick and beanpole. She just felt tall and awkward. So now at 12, she's walking a runway with makeup on the Oprah Winfrey show. Everybody's telling her she's beautiful. Now she has a healthy, high self-esteem. Well, when 15 kicked in and puberty hit, she went to Paris and Milan to become an international supermodel. And they told her that she was 7 centimeters too big to model, which she processed as, I'm obese. She started thinking she was ugly, had a low self-esteem, wanted breast implants, diet, dye her hair. She was just a wreck. It was a meltdown. The moral to that story is when you allow your value to come externally, that either could be changed or taken away from you. And in her case, it was taken away from her. So that story is very important, you know, in the film, because we get to see a perfectly normal girl go through the system, I call it, the media and fashion, and turn out the way most teenage girls are today.
Yeah, what's so interesting about her is that it starts out as a fairy tale, and I'm sure a lot of young people who watch think, gosh, I wish that could happen to me. And you see other girls who want to be just like her. And then, ultimately, what's amazing is that despite the fact that she's been lauded as this beauty, she feels no better about herself than anybody else because there's someone else, you know, just down the pike that's that much thinner or prettier or different than she is.
Or younger. No, the funny thing is I interviewed a lot of supermodels in doing the film, and they had a low self-esteem. You know, they felt like they didn't live up to the image of themselves in the magazines. And I found that really astounding, that these are so-called supermodels, but they feel ugly and fat also.
Daryl Roberts is my guest. He's a filmmaker whose new documentary, America the Beautiful, opens tomorrow at the Angelica Film Center in Dallas. He'll also be making appearances there and answering questions. If you'd like to ask a question right now, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults. The worlds of Manet, Miro, Marx, and Macbeth are yours to explore. Details online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd, here with filmmaker Daryl Roberts. He wrote, produced, and directed the documentary America the Beautiful that opens tomorrow at the Angelica Film Center in Dallas. He's in town for a couple of appearances after those screenings, the one at 7:20 and the one at 9:45 tomorrow. If you want to join our conversation, you can send email to think@kera.org, or you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. You have a group of young guys, I guess, in their 20s and 30s that you interview in the film, I suppose to represent the male point of view, but these guys are really cretins. Can you talk a little bit about them?
Well, I won't say it's like the total male point of view. You know, there are some young guys that think like them, but really I use them in the film like the Greek chorus, kind of spread them throughout. And I want to show that men are victims, too. And what I mean by that is one of the guys, the really bad one, listen to what he said. He said, thank God for cloning, because when cloning becomes big, if you like your Pamela Andersons and other hot chicks, we can just run them off like a Model T Ford and get rid of all the nasty chicks. Now, from the perspective that women are told that you need to look like Pamela Anderson or this to be beautiful, then if you have a guy that thinks that any woman that I'm with needs to look like this image that's being sold, in reality, they're both victims. So unless this guy changes his ideology, he'll never have true love and true happiness. He'll be, even if he doesn't know it, he'll be miserable his whole life. So that's why I put them in the film to show that men are victimized also by, just from the standpoint of having them to want this ultra beautiful woman that's not realistic.
So they've been conditioned to expect that only Cinderella is good enough, or I don't know, Sleeping Beauty, or whatever the most beautiful princess is supposed
right,
to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you struggle with that decision, though, to only use guys with that perspective? Because clearly, and I guess you're sort of this character in the film, there are plenty of men who appreciate women who do not look like actresses or supermodels.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because I had 900 hours of footage with the film, and you only have like an hour, 40 minutes to tell the story. So basically, the film is structured where I just want to show the fallout of what society is doing to us. So every example in the film is the fallout. Maybe that's another movie, though, the positive aspects, the great people in the world. But, yeah, this one kind of shows the fallout.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Leslie in Fort Worth. Hi, Leslie.
Hi. I actually had a question that goes back to the subject earlier about what happens when daughters kind of see their mothers talking bad about their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a fitting room down here in Fort Worth in a department store and saw a mother come out of the fitting room and start questioning her young son about how bad she looked. You know, does this make me look fat? I think my thighs look bad. You know, does my butt look bad? This and that. And I was wondering what the effect on young boys are when their mothers do the same thing in front of them.
Oh, interesting point. Did you look at that at all?
That is interesting. No, we did not cover that in the film. The film is primarily from a female perspective, even though we do have the one guy in the film that, remember the guy with the flat stomach who says, but I need a six-pack. And I asked him, I said, well, why do you need a six-pack? He goes, I don't know. He was just conditioned that his body is supposed to look a certain way, and he gets those images through mass media. But that is a good point. I did not look at it, and that's very interesting. But I have to assume it would have some deleterious effect somehow.
We have an email from Rebecca in Dallas who says, over the past several years, women have been working out more than they were even 10 years ago. In addition to feeling great pressure to be thin, do you find that women are also under increasing pressure to look strong?
Strong?
Muscular?
No, because when we went to the health clubs, most of the women that we interviewed that were working out, most of them told us they were working out in order to get skinny, actually. So I still think that's a primary reason that a lot of women are going to the gym.
How do you reconcile the idea that, our rates of obesity are, higher than they've been at any time in history, and yet there is so much pressure to be thin? Is it a matter of people taking these messages that they should be thin to be valid, to be important, to be loved, and but they're just not able to do it, so they end up just feeling bad about themselves?
Well, yeah, 'cause what happens, like she just brought up the health club, the average woman, when they start hitting these health clubs to get skinny, it only lasts 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 5 weeks, because it's not going to happen. When you're a size 14, 90% of the time, you are not going to be a size 00. And that's what the fashion industry keeps doing. The smaller size used to be a 4, a 2, a 0, 00. I'm sure they'll come up with a quadruple 0 soon. They keep making the sizes smaller, so you'll never reach it. And people get depressed and frustrated. They stop the diets, and then they just start eating, and they're depressed. Because, you know, when you're depressed, you eat a lot. And so I think obesity has a lot to do with us being depressed.
About not being thin enough.
Well, actually, about a lot of things, mm-hmm. but that's one of them. In a society, I think we're literally depressed.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Daryl Roberts is my guest. He's the filmmaker who wrote, produced, and directed America the Beautiful. Let's go next to John in Dallas. Hello, John.
Hello, how you doing? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, thanks.
Great. You know, I heard the comment earlier regarding the fella that wanted to have a house full of Pamela Anderson. And so I thought about that question. Do you think when you were making this this film, did you see any sort of correlation between society pushing beauty and also the beauty model kind of pushing a certain level of promiscuousness or a higher level of sexually active women in the future? I mean, you know, you look at everything on television and you not only see something, a woman being beautiful, but you also kind of see them as being a little bit more willing to possibly go that extra step and being a much more sexually active individual. Do you see that correlation as well?
Yeah, because when you study advertising, one of the primary things that advertising does is use sex to sell. So there's a lot of sex in advertising to teenagers. In the film, I think you saw it, the one teacher, she cut out like hundreds of images and put them on a board, and she called it the wall of porn. Because when you look at all these ads, like she pointed to one, this is a computer game for kids. But there's no computer in the ad. It was just a woman's behind and panties. So all those sexual images absolutely leads to it. The other thing that's kind of mixed with beauty somewhat is the advent of celebrity. There's no other country in the world that idolizes celebrities like America. And in the film, we interviewed this one girl, and she said she wanted to be a slut. And I'm like, why? She said, because Britney Spears is one. And I figure if I could be one like Britney Spears, all the guys will like me. And she ended up getting into a lot of trouble. She was a junior in high school with that way of thinking. So sex being sold in advertising and this whole craziness with this Lindsay Lohan's Paris Hilton celebrity stuff is creating what you're referring to.
We have an email from Marcy who says, I'm an African-American mother of a 10-year-old girl who struggles with how her body looks versus that of her Anglo friends. Does the film touch on the importance of appreciating different body shapes for our types of bodies? Also, she wants to know if you think the movie is appropriate for preteen girls.
Yeah, I have a lot of parents bringing, I think the youngest I've seen was 8, but a lot of parents are bringing their daughters, like mothers, 8 to like 16, because it's a perfect film to start a discussion.
There is some language, but if you talk about that ahead of time, it shouldn't be an issue for most families.
Yeah. Well, actually, we got a rated R because Eve Ensler from the Vagina Monologues.
And we've had her on the show. Yeah.
Oh, did you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's awesome.
Yeah.
She says like one word in the middle of the film, like one curse word in the middle of the film, the guy's an R. But, you know, when parents see it, they go, oh, okay, that was nothing. But, yeah, I believe it is appropriate. I think that, you know, it'll be a perfect way to start discussion, you know, with her daughter. As far as the different images, the film doesn't go, like, specifically into the racial aspect as far as body image, primarily because historically there used to be two very distinct images of black women and white women, and now it's being blurred. You know, we used to never really have eating disorders in our community. Now, you know, I won't say it's running rampant, but it's there and it's getting more and more as the weeks go on. And, it's turning into this melting pot for real now.
And, in fact, Garen, your main character, is African-American.
Yes. Yes, she is.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. The email address is think@kera.org. Let's go next to John in Fort Worth. Hello, John.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Love your show.
Thanks.
I'm a young African-American male, and I got into bodybuilding because I was unhealthy. But now, I'm around a lot of bodybuilders now, and it's almost like the same pressures, like you said before, exist for men, but it's almost neurotic in the fact that men feel like they can't talk about it, and they feel like if they do talk about it, then, or if, like, I've talked about this with a lot of female models that I work with in my photography, and they're just like, well, the same pressures don't exist for men. They really, you know, they're not there as much. But I feel that it really hurts a lot of young men, too. And I'm going to take my question off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
No, he's right, because I've been to probably like 30, 35 eating disorder clinics around the country, and it was all women. So I started doubting that myself. I'm like, so we're under the impression it's affecting men also. Why don't we see any men in the eating disorder clinics? And they said, well, it's because with men, when they have an eating disorder, it's a stigma attached to it. So they don't go to a clinic. It's too embarrassing. And when they go to a doctor, because of that same stigma, it's often misdiagnosed. Like, it's not attributed to being an eating disorder. It's something else. And that's what we're going through. So men are kind of in this, it's happening stage, like he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not cool to talk about it yet. I bet you in 10 years it will be, because it'll be more commonplace. And we're just trying to figure out. Remember, this is new for us.
Yeah.
So we're trying to figure out, where do we fit into this whole thing? I like the word he used. It's neurotic.
And I guess men with body image disorders are doing things like using steroids. And he mentioned working out. And it's a different kind. It's not about being rail thin necessarily for a man.
It's more buff.
Right.
It's more like even the Star Wars movies. If you take the last three Star Wars, freeze the frame on each of them, put them side by side, and you'll notice that Darth Vader's head is getting smaller and his body's getting bigger. The G.I. Joe toys now is becoming more buff with little boys' toys, and they're pushing this Adonis complex on young boys.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. The email address is think@kera.org. You also go into plastic surgery in the film, and the fact that certainly there are a lot of board-certified, qualified plastic surgeons out there, but a lot of people who are doing this on a regular basis are not board-certified.
That kind of shocked me, because the guy like Dr. Ray, for instance, or Dr. Nano 210, I used to watch him, really not for that plastic surgery stuff, because I'm into martial arts and he's a black belt. So I interviewed him. I was all excited. I'm assuming he's on TV. He's a star of that show. He must rock as a plastic surgeon. But then when I called the plastic surgery board and they told me he wasn't board certified, my first thought was, how is it that this guy could be cutting on women without certification from board? Then I found out that the Federal Trade Commission said that ruled in 1977 that any doctor with an MD degree can call themselves a plastic surgeon. So now you're having all these doctors, because of managed health care and HMOs, they're not making as much money. They're abandoning their practices and opening up little plastic surgery shops, some with only like one weekend of training, Friday through Sunday. And it's pretty bad. When you look at that, the other thing I found was that we talk about in the film is the toxins in cosmetics. There's this ingredient, diembutyl phthalates, that's attributed to causing allergies and cancer in women, like in perfume and nail polish and stuff. Then when you look at the eating disorders and them not putting eating disorders as a cause of death on death certificates.
So we don't have the right statistics.
Right, we don't have the right statistics. So let's look at those three things. What are the common denominators? I think it's in this society, and I hate to say this, in 2008, when things primarily affect women, nobody cares. Policy, the way they treat prostate cancer and breast cancer is so different, it's ridiculous. If boys were having eating disorders, I think it would have been something would have been done about a long time ago. Like, insurance companies don't even cover it. You have parents taking out mortgages on their house to pay the $25,000 a month. And that's something I think that needs to be addressed in this country is our treatment of our women.
There are some people who argue, well, women do this to themselves. What do you say to that?
Well, they're willing. And that's one of the questions I asked Eve Ensler from the Vagina Monologues. Why do women willingly objectify themselves? When I said that, we were showing a woman in Hooters walking around in little bikini things. And, you know, like Eve Ensler said, we have been conditioned, women have been conditioned in this society, and the oppression is so, she calls it omnipresent, but it's so subtle that you can't really expect women to have their full bearings about it. From the time that they're like two, they're told, with cartoons, like what does a cartoon say? A cartoon says that if you're Cinderella and you're pretty, and they're very specific about what pretty is, then you're an angel. If you're not, you're a beast. You're ugly. And young girls are getting those images from the time that they're like cognizant of any imagery whatsoever. So I just don't think it's fair to socialize a woman that way, then turn around and say, ah, they do it to themselves, even though they do, but I just don't think it's fair to say that they do.
Yeah. Daryl Roberts is my guest. He wrote, produced, and directed the documentary America the Beautiful. It opens tomorrow at the Angelica Film Center in Dallas. You can meet Daryl and ask him questions at two of the screenings, the 7:20 and the 9:45, when he'll have Q&As afterward. If you want to join our conversation, get on the line at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults. The worlds of Manet, Miro, Marx, and Macbeth are yours to explore. Details online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest is filmmaker Daryl Roberts. His documentary, America the Beautiful, opens tomorrow at the Angelica Film Center in Dallas. You can join us by sending email to think@kera.org. Let's go to Mike in Rockwall. Hello, Mike.
Yeah.
Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Go ahead, please.
My question is basically how do you convince the audience that a person's sexual attraction is conditioned by the media and so on rather than being natural? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for your call.
That's interesting. How do you actually convince someone? That's very interesting. I don't know how to convince you, you know, other than to say that, and it doesn't happen. It's not like 100%. You know, across the board, but like those guys on the couch. And it's not just the one with the body. It was like all of them. And the guys like them that I interviewed that are just not in the movie, that's just what they're looking for. And, you know, I think it's one of those things. I don't know how to convince someone of it other than say that's the way it is. Yeah.
We have an email from Ruby who asks, did you look at whether the science of healthy body weight, and this is all in quotes, science of healthy body weight, is influenced by the fashion industry? In other words, could there be a conspiracy between fashion and the health industry?
No, I don't think so. The only reason I don't think so is because if you go to a doctor or a nutritionist, they will never try to encourage you to lose so much weight that you're anorexic. And if you look at a doctor's charts, when they say if you're this height, your BMI should be this and you should weigh this, none of it is model-like. It's
pretty generous allowances for healthy weight.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that there's a conspiracy, because there's too much of a disparity between what the fashion industry is pushing as beautiful and what a nutrition. And that's, you know, that's one of the points, you know, that I want to make. I feel like we should be dieting, because what you said earlier is true. We do have an obesity problem in the country, but we should diet in a healthy way, like go to a doctor, go to a nutritionist, and do it to become healthy. Don't do it to become skinny. And it's just a different mindset. So when you're working out, but you're not losing pounds, but you're aware of the fact that your metabolism is growing, your organs are getting stronger, and you know that you're making your body better, you're not sitting up obsessing on a scale because, oh, I haven't lost any pounds. You know that you're still doing good for your body.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Shirley in Dallas. Hello, Shirley.
Hi. I just want to say I really love Think. And my question to the gentleman there is this. Women of age usually let themselves go, and they are very offensive and withdrawn from those women that still portray their body as a picture of image and keep themselves very fashionable. Do you have any particular reason that they would feel this particular way and just kind of exclude those women who still portray their body as being beautiful? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for your call.
Not sure I understood the question.
I'm gonna presume that I do understand. I think what she was talking about was the idea that as women get to a certain age, there are some women who will resent those who want to look younger and sort of stay fit in a way that we might associate with a younger woman.
And she's saying, okay. Was there a question or was that a statement?
I'm not exactly sure. I'm assuming that she was asking why there is that sort of, which is not something that really came up in the film very much. But you do have older women. You have one woman in particular, and she's not that old, but she's a middle-aged teacher. And she's very upset by the idea that beauty is something that is being peddled to, say, 7th and 8th grade girls as the most important thing.
And I like her a lot. It's Garen's principle, mm-hmm. actually. I like her a lot because even though you could say that she had a lapse in judgment by taking it out on a 12-year-old child, the underlying thing that she was doing was, you know, sticking up for women and women's rights and speaking out about what's happened to women in this society. And I guess she's resentful. So I guess if that's what she's talking about, she's absolutely resentful. But what did Garen's mother say about her? That she was probably fat all her life. And there is that schism, isn't it? Because Michelle's mother, who, you know, is still skinny and she's like 54, because this woman is speaking out about women and the injustices being done, she assumes that she's just bitter and fat. And that's bad. That's bad.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Heidi in Dallas. Hello, Heidi.
Hi. I am loving the show.
Thanks.
I had a question about the fashion industry as far as clothing sizes. I wear a size 12. I'm perfectly happy with my size 12. But I recently inherited a bunch of sewing patterns from an elderly model relative who was a size 12. I thought, oh, great, I'm the same size as a model. Only to discover that on the back of the patterns, according to the 1960s era, I wear a size 16.
They call that vanity sizing, I think.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, now sizes have been getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and it's, you know.
But actually, I think a lot of clothing stores are making clothes bigger so that you can walk in there and say, "Oh, look at this! I'm a size whatever." When you're old size, that's kind of a trick that they say is played on women.
Which one were you?
So in other words, a woman who 10 years ago was a size 10,
right,
now will walk into a store and they've made the size 10. They've called it a size 6. So the woman feels great about herself,
right?
Even though the scale hasn't changed.
Right. Yeah, I've seen some of that. And it, psychologically, to encourage you now, make you hopeful that you could reach the zero.
The all-powerful zero. It's ridiculous if you think about it. No one's really fooled by it, but somehow there's some value to it.
Now, well, here's the value that we talk about in the film. And it's funny because they say, like, anything that's wrong in a society, if you want to really understand it, look at the financial ramifications and that. So the fashion designers in Milan figured out that from a size, take a woman that's a size 4 and a woman that's a size 0, and the difference between the two, as far as a dress is concerned, is a yard and a half of fabric. You have fashion weeks all over the world in every city twice a year. There's probably 300,000 models that walk runways all over the world every year, and if they can save a yard and a half of fabric on each dress, that's tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars that the fashion industry is saving by making dress sizes smaller. Makes some sense.
See, when I heard that, I didn't buy it because
really?
I thought that was just an excuse for them to say, this is why, it's not that we want unhealthy models, it's just that we're trying to save fabric and we just don't have the money. To me, that rang, not on your part, but on the part of the people that were saying it, it rang untrue.
Really? But I mean, you do know that the statement is true. Like, a size 4 person uses more fabric in a dress than a size 0, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, I thought like you, but I'm like, well, the statement is true. And if we ran by capitalism, somebody would figure that out, that if we made models have to be skinnier so we could save fabric, then we save a bunch of money.
Of course, they charge $18,000 for the dress that the model is wearing anyway. So.
Anyway, right.
Let's talk next to Lisa in Denton. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I was just wanted to make a comment. I grew up in Southern California, and then I moved to San Francisco. And living in L.A., it was like, you know, you had to be a certain size, blonde hair, have a good car, you know. And I felt that eating disorders and eating issues were just constantly around me. And then when I moved to San Francisco, it was sort of like, you know, the more unique you are, the better. I rarely came across women with eating issues and things like that. And I was just wondering if you noticed regional patterns or national patterns of, you know, like certain areas of the country seem like, you know, those issues are less important. You know, if you had any, I mean, obviously in bigger cities you're going to get more issues because there's more fashion. But is it? Are there certain areas, you think, of the country that seem like sort of women have healthier attitudes towards weight and size, or is it just sort of is it just kind of prevalent everywhere in high schools everywhere?
Well, it's prevalent everywhere, but I would say like the two worst places I found was Los Angeles and New York. Then Miami came right afterwards. There in places like Vancouver, Washington, I found like. And not that this is a good thing, but women were like a lot larger, 16, 18. But you know what? They were fine with it, and they weren't going around feeling bad about themselves. So there's something to be said for, you know, maybe we need to exercise and diet just for health reasons, but they weren't running around worried about not looking like Paris Hilton. So in most of the – I tell you what, here in Dallas, because the film premiered at a film festival here, AFI Dallas – you know, parts of Dallas around that W Hotel, whatever area that is, it's becoming like a mini Los Angeles. And you're right, the bigger cities that's more accessible to all this stuff normally are more influenced than, say, Topeka, Kansas, you know.
Let's go next to Dink in Fort Worth. Hi, Dink.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call here.
Sure.
I have a question. This is all very interesting to me, and I've been studying the situation for over 60 years. My question is, what has happened to handsome women or striking women or stately women or secure women? All that we've been talking about fall in the category of cute and pretty and twisty and shrieking. Their voices have even changed. They're very shrill now. I'm quite accustomed to women who have a different form of voice, you know, a different voice tone and everything else like that. I'll take my message over the phone, but there's a lot of fine women out there in this other category, and I look for them.
Dink, thanks very much for your call. I guess he means different standards of attractiveness.
Well, no, they absolutely exist. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole thing. I don't know if you remember in the film, I had those four high school boys, mm-hmm. and they were like, ugh, I don't want a skinny woman. I want a woman with some meat on them. So not everybody is buying into this standard that, you know, the advertisers are selling us. It's just that a lot of people are, but not everybody. And what he's saying is true. There are all different types of awesome women out there. And I'm with you, sir. I'm looking for them also.
So I have to ask you, and I thought this was a gutsy thing to do, but you opened the film with a pretty striking admission that you dated a woman for a while that was very attractive and wonderful, and you broke up with her assuming that you could find someone just as nice but even more beautiful. So can you identify with the people who put beauty above everything else?
Yeah, you know, and that's how I came to do this film in the first place. I was sitting up one day just reflecting back. I had two relationships in a row, 5 years and 5 years, and beautiful women on the inside. As far as human beings, just absolutely beautiful. And I didn't marry either one of them because I thought, oh, man, we'd get somebody exactly like this, but just drop dead gorgeous, and it never happened. And that in that reflection is what made me eventually do this documentary. And that, but remember, that was my point at the beginning of the show. We're all victims. I was a victim. I thought that I was supposed to have somebody really beautiful and that it was going to make me happy. And it's just, it was all a lie.
Does it strike you that pretty much everybody who watches the film and talks to you will say, yes, you're right, this is madness. And we all seem to understand this, and yet everybody kind of plays into it in a certain way.
No, what was really fascinating is at the beginning of the film, those teenagers from that high school, they went through this media literacy class. They were so articulate at dissecting what companies are doing and how they're trying to brainwash them. And you sit there and you listen to it and you go, oh my gosh, these kids are really smart and really articulate. But all of them turn right around and buy into it. And I think, I'll tell you what I think it is. I think it's because in society right now, we're not reinforcing anything positive to people. Like in art, if you go back 30 years, say with the TV shows, Leave It to Beaver, the Brady Bunch, it was all about the family structure, being a good person, doing the right thing, having morals, and television was a reflection of society, which was being, now it's just a bunch of rap music, video games, sidekicks, iPods, electronics, everything's disconnected, and nobody's reinforcing, be a good person. And I think that's why they fall into it. They have nowhere else to go.
Filmmaker Daryl Roberts wrote, produced, and directed the documentary America the Beautiful. It opens tomorrow at the Angelica Film Center in Dallas. You can meet Daryl after the 7:20 and 9:45 screenings there tomorrow. Daryl, thank you so much for spending the hour.
Thank you. This was wonderful, Chris.
Good.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.